And we are back with episode 409 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and if that's what they mean by keel hauling, I'll pass.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and you know, suddenly I'm not that concerned about my home security system.
And we are going to be attempting, at the very least, to keep things moving nicely, as we have a relatively short list here, and we may have to expound a little bit in order to make sure that we use up as much time as possible. But this will be an interesting week, that's for sure. But Edmund, before we get into any of the festivities, why don't you go ahead and give the usual disclaimer?
Absolutely. We will talk about anything and everything that happens in these episodes, so we must warn you that you will be spoiled. But we always try and wait a week or so before we do that, so we hope you've had a chance to catch up and haven't been off just watching the Olympics and ignoring all these lovely shows.
Go!
That's right. Don't even. recording on the day of yet another loss of a U.S. hockey team to a Canadian hockey team. Yeah. But at any rate, our new
but they're very polite about it.
Yes, they're insufferably polite about it. Our new format, of course, is that while we are allowing the flow of shows to be determined as we go in terms of what show we're going to be talking about. Also, of course, we are going to give our scores for any given episode right after we do the recap, so that you hear the promo, you get the recap, and then you hear what our scores are, and then we will have our commentary based on what those scores might be, whether they're above average, below average, and somewhat less if it is simply a mediocre episode. So we're going to focus, hopefully, on the things that you want to hear versus just going on about episodes that really just feel like filler, to be kind of blunt. That said, we are going to go ahead then and jump into our first topic. And Gary, why don't you take the reins this time and start us off?
No problem. I want to go along with my little teaser from the opening and go back to Almost Human.
All right. Sounds good. Let's go ahead and run the promo.
It's Monday.
I'm the next generation in Centurion Security.
Security bot. Maybe you should apply.
Someone is hacking synthetics.
Right now, the deaths are being attributed to a malfunction in the home security system.
Targeting those.
Thorin, you okay?
Who protect us.
Somebody planted these images in Dorian's head for a reason. Need to keep an eye on him, John. We both do.
We are friends. You don't have to keep things from me.
Okay, and if you could do the recap for us?
Absolutely. We're talking about Season 1, Episode 11, Disrupt. A crime from the future turns deadly when a smart home targets its occupants, and Kennex and Dorian must deal with a mysterious hologram to investigate the case. I don't really grab the episode, but what do you guys think?
Well, Henry gave this one a 6 out of 10, so that's an interesting place to start. Edmund, how about you?
I wasn't that enthused by some of the stuff going on, and I think I will agree with the 6.
I'm probably falling more around a 7. How about you, Gary?
Yeah, I'm close to the 7. Again, they keep throwing out sort of what future life is like, and it is appealing to me in some sense of the terms. So it keeps catching my attention. But yeah, I have problems with this episode.
And so you're going to
7.
At 7. Okay. Yeah. Once again, we have what is definitely more on the lower end of our range of scores this season for Almost Human. Edmund, in particular, why would you give this a 6?
Yeah, I guess the part that annoyed me was once they started investigating, and particularly the rather almost comically simple infiltration of the hacker network. I thought some of the stuff they were setting up with the Uber security systems and the possibilities for how it could all go horribly wrong was nice, but it seemed like a missed opportunity where they it just seemed to happen all too easily, and the idea of this hacker just rather quickly getting turned into police and, you know, and informant and helper just didn't really make sense to me. And I wish they'd taken the opportunity to actually show us more of the dark underbelly of this society that we've been learning about.
Yeah, I mean, I see your point, definitely. One thing that I felt was a little bit dissonant in this episode was when they went to great lengths to explain how decadent these parties are. And when we get to see it, it's basically about as tame as it can get. It was like two steps above a LAN party, you know, maybe if some goths got to it or something. Ever since the party,
which party are you talking about? You know, you have everybody sort of just sitting around doing nothing in the VR setup or VRware, I think they called it. But then when you actually go into that VR world, it did look like a bit of a rave party, that type of thing.
I guess, but I mean, when they did something similar on Caprica, it was definitely a lot more risque. I mean, that was not really all that. You know, it didn't live up to the billing, I guess you could say. And certainly, you know, it's like, oh, we're going to dress like this. And really all that Kennex dressed up was, you know, like maybe a dude with a midlife crisis trying to dress like a biker. And Stahl didn't look all that different, except for with the hair. But yeah. Again, it's like it was a little lame as an attempt to show this, like, you know, seedy underbelly thing. But it wasn't a huge thing. It was just a little dissonant, and that was kind of what kept this from really doing any better than average for me. How about you, Gary?
Well, it was shot in Canada, John, so maybe they don't party quite so anyway, yeah, I know what you're saying, and I have a serious criticism and something to touch on, but I'll try and say show specific. Yeah, it seemed to lack some energy. The I think her name was Kristen, who was the main agitator of this episode. We never really got a sense of her motivations. Yes, we knew that they were seeing each other in love, at least the person that was killed by the home security system originally. But I never really got a sense of her motivations of doing it besides what everyone else had said, that, oh, they were seeing each other, and why she's so driven to, you know, make this statement against the company. I felt like I needed more of a emotional hook to understand her, and we never really got it. At least I didn't feel we did. Secondly, the menacing hologram / android just really was not menacing. you know, even as the two of them lined up with each other, it still really didn't scare me or intimidate me or worry me that much. I had a sense they were going for ominous, but I never got that.
Yeah, it was essentially a fairly run-of-the-mill episode, and unfortunately, with them kind of driving towards the end of the season, it's unfortunate that they've had a couple episodes now that have been a bit below the mark. I really don't even know how much more to say about this. It started off with an interesting enough mystery. You know, the safe house program effectively just going on a murder spree was kind of nice, but it went kind of conventional from there. And I didn't even find the whole thing of what's the tech guy's name? It starts with an R. I can't remember.
Rudy.
You know, Rudy. His whole thing with Dorian felt just like a time-filling B-plot. I didn't really get what that was supposed to really get at.
Yeah, at first I was expecting some sort of major secret reveal or something like that,
right.
And or like Dorian had killed somebody or something, and that's why he was deactivated or something like that. But it never really went there, and I don't know if it will go there. Well, so that
I got the impression that they were trying to set something up for the last couple of episodes, but the way it was done and the rest of the episode not being that compelling, it just didn't. Certainly, for me, didn't have the effect I think they were going for, of being some big, deep mystery that we need to start delving into with Dorian now.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, in general, the show, you know, as you think of the series, it started off with this whole terrorist group with the ex-girlfriend being involved in it and things like that. And I'd assume going into the show that you were going to have some sort of like arc, or at least overall arc, to this series. And, you know, they pretty much cleaned that up by episode 3. And now we're just getting almost, you know, problem of the week type stuff. And I feel like it's hurting the show.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what Fox seemed to want. They wanted more of a procedural than a serialized show. And, you know, they wanted to be able to air the episodes out of order as they have and everything else. And I just think the show needed to be something different than perhaps what the network wanted. And they're not getting the return that they're looking for either.
Right? I mean, the show is extremely on the bubble, leading towards not being renewed, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was disappointed to read that in some of this week's news, on shows that are coming back. Because, I mean, I think we all agree that the show has potential, but they're just not quite executing it properly. They're handling the future tech in a real reasonably interesting manner, but when it comes to the actual plot of the show, I don't even say they need to be imaginative. They just really need to, you know, like hit the target with it, and I don't get the sense they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. All right, is there anything else that we want to say about this, or are we ready to switch to the next topic? I think we are. Edmund.
Why don't we shift over to the latest Walking Dead?
Okay, sounds good. Let's go ahead and run the promo.
Hyundai presents scenes from the next episode of The Walking Dead.
We aren't the only survivors. We should do something.
I need to help them.
We cannot split up. Not now.
Maggie?
Video, go to amc.com.
And if you could do the recap.
Absolutely. Walking Dead, Season 4, Episode 10, Inmates. The group encounters obstacles in their quest for stability and safety. I see AMC's summary writers have...
struck again, yes.
They have to do something in the off-season, yeah.
Mad Men to Walking Dead, okay. This was the aftermath stories from the prison breakup. This time following Daryl and Beth and the two little girls whose names are escaping me.
Psycho and Friend.
Yes. Carol trained her perhaps a little too well.
Yeah. Lizzie and Micah, I think.
Ooh, very nice. Yes, I believe you are correct.
Absolutely. And we're supposed to rate these first, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Yes, okay. I would give this one an 8.
Okay, and Gary?
I'm actually going to go a 9 because I've been holding out being so curious about what happened to these characters. I was really, sort of excited to, see them and see how they survived. And I wasn't sure if everybody was going to survive in this series. You can't always say that's a given. So I was glad to see everybody pretty much had made it out in one piece. And, I enjoyed the catching up stories. They were, in some cases, suspenseful. I even caught myself going, no, 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 a few times, which is a pretty good indicator they had me hooked this episode. So, yeah, I'll go with the 9.
Yeah. Interesting. I went with the 8 as well. And for me, it was a bit of a choice between the two. I was back and forth. And the reason that I think I went with the 8 is that while I definitely wanted to know what happened with all these characters, I kind of felt like I missed the intensity of the focus that the previous episode had provided. It wasn't as deep. That said, also, there were a couple times where I feel like they played the game of the act break, kind of trying to fool you into thinking that someone was dead, and of course, turned out, no, that's not the case. And it worked fine the first time around, because nobody really wanted Judith to bite it, but the second time with Glenn was a little bit unnecessary. Mm-hmm. So that took a little of it off for me. On the other hand, and I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, but boy, did they do a nice job of recalibrating this into some of the storylines, post-prison storylines in the comic. It's really nice how they are weaving some of those elements back into the story. In a way that I should have seen coming, and I was kind of half suspecting it, but now having it confirmed the way that it is, I'm really surprised that they went that way. It works a lot better than I thought that it would. Let's put it that way. I don't know if Gary was had read up to this point or not.
I do like how even when they're trying to sort of separate themselves or go in a different path, that they're able to, pick up some of the pieces of the series and pull them back in. Now it's good because as they start to depart more and more from it, you almost wonder, gosh, but know, there were so many good ideas, and are still are in some cases, some good ideas coming out of the series. It's a shame to just, you know, cast them aside and not avail yourselves of them just because maybe one character isn't there anymore or not. So no, I'm glad they're picking up pieces of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, Edmund, how about you? Why would you give this an 8 versus, say, the 9?
It was partially because it did seem to suffer in comparison to the previous episode. I think that was partially a function of having to follow all of these different storylines rather than just focusing on the one. It wasn't even so much that it didn't feel as focused. It was a little scattershot. This was the episode that really felt more like, you know, okay, we're showing you all the things we need to show you to get the story recalibrated, as you said. And in a way, I mean, I was having a similar reaction to all of the attempted misdirection of who'd survived and who hadn't, and it for me it almost got to the point of feeling like if you're going to wind people up this much, at least somebody should have died.
Exactly. It almost felt like they were building to a shocking loss.
Some shocking loss, and guess who the guest the guest on the couch is on Talking Dead, the person who's not here anymore. Not that I necessarily wanted any of these people not to be on the show anymore, but it's just when you're playing around with it that much, that you kind of do have to pull the trigger, all puns intended.
Exactly. On the other hand, I think that it set up a lot of good things, which is why it gets the 8 versus, say, a 7, right? What it set up for... I like where they started with Daryl and Beth. That's an interesting combo to have there. Then, certainly, the idea that Carol and Tyrese are in the same group.
Yeah.
With the big open question now of, okay, the things that Carol had, you know, quote-unquote admitted to... Well, now there's a big, big, big reason to think maybe she didn't have anything to do with that, and she was covering for our little psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And right.
Well, Carol showing up really surprised the heck out of me. I did not expect that.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that twist was certainly the one that was done the best in the episode.
Yeah.
I was expecting it almost to be, you know, where Daryl and Beth had wound up, you know, in the same area, and they'd all wound up turning into one big group, and then having Carol there. I mean, it did make perfect sense as well.
And I love that. I'm not sure if there's a term for it, but I love that mechanism where they sort of, like, as you were saying, Edmund, went back through the same territory, the two different groups. So you saw that sort of time shifted. Replay of events or what they thought had happened, and I really enjoyed watching it in a sense happen twice, even though they weren't correct about what had happened or they assumed incorrectly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, actually, I mean, I will say that compared to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode that was using some of those similar techniques, I thought that this episode did it with quite a bit more finesse than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did.
Mm. Now, what do you guys think of the possibility that Lizzie was the one that actually killed Karen and the other person who was infected?
I just don't see them. I don't see her motivation personally. I mean, I'd like to think that, you know, Carol did do it.
Yeah, I think they may have. Thrown some question into it here, though, because, you know, it seems like Lizzie took the survival by any means necessary lesson very much to heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that if she's willing to suffocate a baby in order to ensure that she's not a threat, that she would go through that line of thinking that we all assumed Carol did, where she would say, I have to stop this infection from spreading, and the only way to do that is to kill and burn the bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And drag it out up the stairs through the cell blocks. I still think I can see them retroing it to do that, but I still, remembering the original episode, I have a hard time.
That was the part that was giving me some hesitation. But unless the flashback is that Lizzie killed them and then Carol discovered her, and then, you know, so it was Carol doing the dragging and burning to try and cover it up, basically.
And then that may be why she felt the need to take credit for it.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, okay, I need to do this because she's getting sloppy now. That kind of thinking, you know, but who knows? I mean, I just feel like they've been kind of seeding this from the very start of the season, which is a nice touch. I like the fact that now we're, you know, it leads you to go back and look and say, maybe there's more going on there than we think.
I guess. I just thought they were setting her up as a future problem, not so much as much as that issue, but I see your points.
Yeah. And I guess, in my mind, the fact that she, you know, it might have been enough for her to just go after Judith, but, you know, it makes me think that she's willing to, how far is she willing to go? And when is it going to become obvious that she's an issue? So, I guess we'll find out. And then, of course, we had Maggie and her group of red shirts. I mean, extras. And yeah, wow. I mean, the whole thing with the bus was pretty intense.
Yes, it was.
And I wasn't sure that. Well, I didn't think that they were going to have Glenn be a walker, but I was beginning to wonder if he would have had to have said, like, because they showed like one body on top of the other.
Right.
And I was kind of wondering if we were going to get into that kind of scenario where in order to survive, he basically had to kill a walker and then hide under it in order to, and that he would have been in there as everyone else in the bus was basically eating each other just to survive, you know, that trauma that he would have to go through in order to survive. And I was like, ooh, that's a really nasty place to go. And then they didn't go there. I was like, oh, okay. I'm actually thankful they didn't go where my head was going.
I think I'm scared now. Anyway,
I was having the exact same thought as she was making her way through the bus.
Well, I was still trying to figure out how he could have been in the bus, because I don't ever remember a scene where he was headed away from the bus.
That was just in terms of, you know, Maggie's assumption that, you know, he might have made it back to the bus. So, you know, we of course got more information as the audience than they did. But
well, I think that they left it open as to whether he came back to the bus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they showed him running off from it, and then all we knew was that the bus was leaving. So what happened in between was kind of the big question for this episode, which, I mean, the natural assumption is, of course, is that he wasn't there. And it turned out, he wasn't.
Yeah.
Where he ended up was kind of weird, but...
that was the one segment where I really felt like, okay, this is obviously a quick preview of a level in the new Walking Dead game.
Yeah, exactly, right? You have acquired
on this roof.
Guard armor.
Yes.
Yeah. It did. It felt like a video game, didn't it? Yeah, that's what that was. Discovered weapons cache. Okay, load.
Yes.
Run as quick as you can. Get to gate without any.
Discover other survivor. Do you throw them to the zombie or try to protect them?
Yes. Objective must keep other survivor alive. Until you reach checkpoint. But I'd play the heck out of that game, but yeah, it did feel a little strange. I think that this was still a good, strong episode. I personally have not felt like there's been one episode that has been even average, and that's been reflected in our scores. It's only a hair below our average score for last season, so and I feel like they're building to even bigger things. There's some stuff coming up. So we've got 6 episodes? Yeah, they've got plenty of time to build to a big finale here.
And certainly, I mean, you know, running into the paramilitaries right at the end was a nice spot to bring it to. Another bunch of crazy survivors for us to deal with.
Yes, Abraham. I will just say that he is a much anticipated addition from the comics run. As are his two companions, actually. I was kind of surprised that they went as far as to align that much with it. So I'll be interested to see if they stick to the characterizations there. They certainly looked the part. But yeah, that was a nice little way for that to end, and definitely left it on a note that I was, I'll be very excited to see where they go from here. Okay, so we are going to have our mid-show break, and when we come back, we will see what Gary wants to talk about next, so stay tuned. Right, and Gary, what would you like to go through next?
I would like to talk about being human.
All right, and here's the promo.
What brings you here, Robbie?
You have 30 days to vacate.
You and I moved in here to be normal.
The first couple to see the house, slaughter them. Eat them like it's Sunday brunch.
Stop coming up with scenarios where I eat people.
Being Human, all new this Monday at 9, only on Sci-Fi.
All right, and if you could do the recap for me?
Absolutely. We're in Season 4, Episode 6, Cheater of the Pack. Josh's life takes a surprising turn, and he fears for the worst in his future with Nora and Aiden. Meanwhile, Aiden struggles to stave off his hunger while remembering what he once had with Susanna, and Sally travels back in time after receiving news from someone from her past.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think you would give this one?
I gave this one a 7.
Okay. And Edmund?
I would give it an 8.
All right. And for me, I'm going to have to go with a 7. So a little more on the average end. I guess I'll start off. One of the things that kind of bothered me here is that we have the standard trope of the guy in the relationship that suffers because the guy is trying to hide something that if he would just come out and say it, it would be so much better for him. And
especially in this case.
Yes. It's just like, if he had had the chance to just come out and say what was going on, it wouldn't have been a happy moment, but it would have been a lot better than when, you know, this person comes in and starts beating the crap out of him. that was not the time for her to find out. But yeah, we have the class. I mean, I almost feel like this was a little predictable that Josh and Nora joined the pack, and there are people that kind of, at least the one woman who is the pack leader's wife, who kind of embraces this idea of the pack and sharing. And, yes, you know, those who are more human-minded that don't really think that way. And yeah, it's going to cause tension. And you know, I definitely got the feeling like this wasn't the first time that she had indulged in this particular fashion. And if it wasn't for the fact that Josh was kind of a bit overwrought about the whole thing, it definitely would have gone differently. But yeah, what do you guys think? I mean, I know that from the other side of it, though, I definitely kind of saw Nora's point about the fact that Josh is sitting back saying that he's more in control of his wolf than he ever has. But not that I actually think he is. Clearly, there's plenty of signs that he's not, that she's conveniently ignoring. But what do you guys think? Anything else to add to Josh and his travails?
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, that part of it was the lesser part of the episode. It was definitely one of those cases of getting annoyed at the character, and it was some of the twists on the vampire and ghost side that got me giving it a slightly higher rating.
Mm.
Well, as far as I go with Josh, you know, they'd just gone through this thing where he was barely seen as not being a wolf for, was it 3 or 4 months now? I mean, everybody's aware he has problems with his wolves, even after Sally's ripped the body out of the wolf spell that she did. And so I'm surprised that he's not being more honest. Is he afraid that talking about it is going to not make it happen or you know, make it happen worse? It just seems at this point, I thought he was past some of this shyness might not be the right word, but his reluctance to discuss his problems. I thought we were pretty much past there, and he'd have been a lot more open, you know, especially with Nora, if no one else. So it almost seems out of character for him.
Well, you know, you make a good point. As far as everyone else knowing that he is having issues. So that being the case, and certainly with Nora having gone through so much to try and stick by him while he was not at all human, and I would think, I understand that the emotions involved, certainly, but I would still think that there would be, maybe that's why she's still sticking around. Maybe she is taking into account that, and, you know, the natural anger that's involved, you know, she has to do something with, but I would think that everyone would kind of cut him a little bit of slack, especially when it comes out that, you know, the other person involved was very manipulative in the whole thing. I almost get the sense that she picked him intentionally because of the fact that he was the new guy.
I'm waiting for the next pregnancy.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we'll go there, but I was like, she keeps talking. Oh, they just had the kid. And
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Geez, please don't telegraph it that much, because I don't think I pick up on this stuff this quick. And if I did, then that's pretty cheesy.
as far as Aiden is concerned. Oh, yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, just one last. I mean, it also occurs to me when you're starting off talking about sort of the standard trope and the guy getting in trouble. Let's not forget that Nora ran off with the twins for how long?
Yeah,
Josh was fine taking her back.
Well,
oh, I'd forgotten about them. Yeah.
What I say is that she had the initial reaction, but I get the sense that she's not running off.
Yeah,
and it's more like, tonight I'm really angry. We'll deal with this tomorrow.
And you have to sleep on the couch.
That's right. Or it's run crazy for the entire night. I mean, there's possibility you'll do that. Okay, so turning over to Aiden for a moment. I guess my only comment there is, luckiest vampire in the world yet again.
Well, you know, you say that, but at the same time, you know, Aiden has come so far, I felt, as far as handling these urges and cravings, that as I see him really degenerate back down again to what we had seen him from early on in the series, I just, much as I was complaining about Josh's sort of regression, I feel like Aiden's undergoing the same thing right now. It's a writer's plot. Okay, let's devolve our characters. And I would rather see them keep moving forward than fall into these, you know, pits, but I guess maybe it's making them more human that they, you know, have faults that they fall back into.
I guess I see where you're coming from. I also had the thought that when we first saw Aiden, he had been off of human blood for a period of time, and then everything went down with Bishop, and then with his little affair with Soren, and it's like when you've been on the wagon for a while and you fall off and you're trying to get back on, and it's like that struggle, because he keeps falling off. And so he you know, I don't know. I'm not really explaining it well, I don't think. But to me, it's like his stability has now been challenged to the point where he can never quite get back to a comfort zone in terms of not drinking human blood. Mm-hmm. And because he's now struggling with those urges more directly, to be up against somebody who's trying to kind of force him back, and he's caught between what he, you know, the bender that he can go out with Kenny on, and his wife, who came out of nowhere, clearly has something going on that she feels like she has to not just, you know, go veggie on everybody, but, you know, kill other vampires in order to atone for being one. He's kind of caught between extremes right now.
Right.
And he's trying to not be the one in control of everything. And to me, I feel like the only way for him to really have what he wants is going to be stepping up. And he just keeps resisting. Really, that's what they all are. They're all getting more and more power in some sense, and yet they're trying to resist the urge to become what they might be, because they're losing their humanity in the process.
Right.
Anything to add? Sir. I mean, but again, I get your point, because you know, I'm feeling this is more of an average episode than you know, the above average side. But you know, you thought that this was pretty strong, Edmund, obviously.
Yeah, it. I guess with Aiden's story, the classic analog, of course, is vampires and addiction, and so the idea of him struggling and having relapses kind of makes sense to me.
Well, it's the closest to what was the original Being Human concept, the British version, right? I mean, that was much more obviously aligned with vampirism as addiction than this has been. And maybe that's just because it's so close to that, and because they've gone in some of these other directions, to Gary's point, it feels a little odd for them to still be on that point so directly when they could really just kind of stretch in other directions if they wanted to. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I can see that.
So then, let's see. We also have Sally. And Edmund, why don't you go ahead and start us off on... What did you...
Sure.
Really like that, right? So.
I liked the making use of Sally's time shifting to... give us more of that backstory on both her despicable ex and her brother, speaking of stretching things, in that storyline we've now got this strong implication that yes, Little Smokey is in fact still around in some spectral form, and is rather malicious. Or at least that's the way I read all of that. And also still that nice bit of humor with the Sally going all poltergeisty to nix the sale of the house.
Oh, I just think that whole mini plot line stunk, but that was just.
I'll admit, Edmund, I did not make the connection with Little Smokey and what happened at the end of the episode.
That's the way I read it anyway. So, all this digging and Sally, you know, thinking she's got to try and save her, and it's going to wind up Little Smokey's a malevolent little force that she's going to have. She might actually have to shred. Who knows? Bringing up all of her issues with abuse of power, etc. So I was rather pleased with what was going on that side of the episode.
Okay, Gary, anything to add as far as Sally's side, other than you know, now we've got brother and sister.
Well, actually, I really liked that they did bring the brother back in this episode. Yeah, it's often hard for them to pull for reasonable methods, a supporting character back into the show. Usually they're just dead. So it was nice to see him come back and still see him, you know, just as troubled and having problems and not having it together as he'd been, you know, that we'd seen him in the past. You know, while we talk about people changing back and forth as far as the main character goes, he seems like he's pretty much right in the same place.
Yeah. And just to mention, he is, in fact, the relative, and he is dead. So,
yes.
So he wound up in the same general place, just in a manner that...
Well, I'm just saying, yeah, but, well, they brought him back.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, it, it definitely is interesting, and I'm kind of curious if he was driving this whole idea of selling the apartment, then now that this has happened, what's going to happen with that? Because now they're both going to be there, mm-hmm. ostensibly.
Well, maybe.
Unless, of course, he walks through his door, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's a two-go show for long, so.
No, probably not. I mean, they're not going to do like a Josh and Nora and have a second one hanging about. So, okay. That all being said, to round this one out, Edmund, what would you like to jump into?
Let's talk about Helix.
Okay. Let's go ahead and run that promo.
This Friday on Helix.
There she is. What do you think? Good or bad?
Definitely bad.
I'm Constance Sutton, the Ilaria Corporation.
I don't think our agenda is her agenda.
I'm here for one reason only. To help you.
Helix, all new this Friday at 10, only on Sci-Fi.
Okay, and if you could do the recap, please.
Sure, this is Helix Season 1, Episode 7, Survivor Zero. Daniel makes a discovery. Hitaki protects Walker from Sutton's mercenaries. I'm still in the usual place with this show, but I think I will give this one a 7.
Okay. And Gary, how about you?
I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'm going to go the 8, actually, for this.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. Because I'm kind of around I'm between a 6 and a 7, and I think I'm going to have to go with the 6, to be honest.
I can understand that, but...
Yeah. But, okay, let's start with you, Gary. What made you think of this as an 8?
I felt, well, number one, you know, having Jerry Ryan on it alone deserves at least partial point credit. But that aside, I felt like they pushed the story forward a little bit. The stakes got a little bit higher than they had before. Everything seemed kind of nebulous before. Now we have a better understanding of the companies that were pushing, I guess, to, as best I can tell, you know, weaponize this thing to have the virus and have a cure to use, because they want to get rid of some of the population, and that, you know, everyone who's at the lab site is not allowed to leave it. They want them all, you know, killed before they leave. So I felt it raised the stakes and defined the show a little bit better, which in my opinion, you know, ranked rating it up a little bit higher.
Okay. I guess for me, part of the problem was that, and I don't know if you were on the last show where we talked about Helix, but some of the stuff that was in this episode was kind of predictable. I think that as far as this combination of virus and cure, and it being kind of a plan to release the virus and then control the cure from a corporate side, I was thinking more of a corporate shadow government kind of angle, but a purely corporate one is fine.
Don't let your bias enter into this.
As far as who would need to be involved, it would make a little more sense if there was some kind of government handoff going on. I mean, yes, this is in the, like, way up in the Arctic, but there are still countries that are ostensibly in control of the territory. Yep. So I would think that a corporation that has been for decades doing this kind of research would need to have some kind of government backing, even if it was just that they bought off the government. But at any rate, Jerry Ryan's character felt just over the top in a lot of ways. I mean, her corporate speak was maddening. if all too familiar, but then that too. I mean, we had that going on, and then she's like, obviously she's had something to do with this far beyond just being a bean counter, because she actually has the cure, it seems. Right. The same one that Walker has. But she's like, you know, filing her teeth down and throwing out threats.
What the heck was that? I still don't understand that part of it.
I mean, what the heck is going on with this woman? And it just completely was just off-putting. And unfortunately, it wasn't in a way that felt like ultra-threatening. It was just kind of like, what else are we going to throw in the show? It just feels like it's flailing about right now. And, you know, Hitaki all of a sudden is like seems to have a lot more remorse and regret over where things are going than he ever has up to this point. Is that because the corporate people kind of stepped in because now they feel like they're on the verge of getting what they want? I don't know, but you know, he's done some pretty amazingly questionable things, and yet now he feels kind of regret for what he's done with Walker. It all just doesn't gel for me. It feels like throwing stuff up at the screen and seeing what sticks. And yeah, no, it does not have anything to do with that first scene at the very beginning of the episode that I knew Edmund was going to wait for me to say something about, where what's his name, the main CDC scientist whose name I keep forgetting.
Now I'm blanking too.
But anyway,
Peter,
where
it's his brother?
Yeah, Peter's brother. I don't know. That's how bad the characters are on this show. Where he has his little dig about the fact that, you know, they're in the CDC and those big pharma guys are all about profit and don't care anything about it. It's like, oh boy, here we go. Really, did we need that? Meanwhile, we've got this thing about a corporation that has nothing to do with pharmaceuticals that's creating a virus and a cure in order to basically control who survives the viral apocalypse. Mm-hmm. I mean, people rewatching the conspiracy episodes of The X-Files a little too often. But yeah, that it just felt like a bit of a muddled mess. Edmund, you're right in the middle. I mean,
I wound up as average because some of the stuff with Walker and her trying to get a handle on what she had, and facing down the I want to call them walkers, but with her magic, vectors. I thought that worked rather well, and some of the implications that they were introducing with Jeremy Ryan's character and finally giving us more of the background. It was good that they were doing that, but I was still feeling like we were running into that problem of a lot of people talking in rooms has become my shorthand for it. Yeah, it does definitely have that feel of just throwing a lot of stuff out there, and I'm not really confident they're really sure of where they're going, and especially given those some of our issues with the later seasons of Battlestar Galactica. I've got a hideous suspicion that no, they're kind of starting there and continuing with that sort of storytelling and plotting.
I've forgotten series season 2.5 existed out of there. So.
2.5, 3, 4.1. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Anything more to say about this episode of Helix? Because at the end of the day, I mean, we had a high score, an average score, a low score. It all kind of jumbles together to an average episode.
I really need somebody to explain that teeth grinding thing to me. I still don't get it.
Man, I mean, I understand the plaque builds up. You don't want to go to the dentist. This is a bit extreme. That's all I'm thinking.
Yeah. You know, what is that? Let's see. You have what? Soft, medium, firm, and impenetrable. I have no idea.
And small grit sandpaper, I guess. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. Well. You know what? Washington supposedly had wooden teeth. She's just upped it to titanium. So.
Oh, maybe. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...